Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, Hotep family. We are here at the Philadelphia. Mimi Abu-Jamal has just called in, and you will hear his voice in a few moments.
How you doing, Mamiya? This is Tanae Harris. We have a question for you. Out here, we have a lot of young people, tens of millions of young people who are unemployed from all different various backgrounds. People, it's very hard for them. So what would you say to this?
I would say, first of all, black people, people of color, and those people need to join the contract if it's a color place. This is a mandatory. It's got to be a part of it. It's not a mandatory right now. It's mandatory.
Again, you know, our country and this administration is preparing to go to war all over the world. What would you say about the question of war and peace, and what should the people be doing to guarantee that this administration cannot end up wars wherever they want to?
Instead of all my fellow who promise you the home.
Thank you, Monia. This is a young woman named So Hard.
I miss you the most.
What'd you say?
I said, that's not the line for sell out of home. I will promise you the and they won't be here.
Okay. Well, this is So Hard. She's from Iran. She has a question.
Hello, Monia. But are very much committed to racial, economic, and social justice. And my concern is, what is our role in the academy given the corporatization, increasing corporatization of the university system and the neoliberal policies aimed at American universities? What is our role in putting forth an economic, racial, social justice agenda when we're constantly being censored and our research matters and our political views are being censored and blocked by the university system?
Well, that's very, very good. Think about
has a question. A young warrior named Virginia who was 14 years old. Kind of the same age we were when we stumbled into the Panther.
This is New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. You are listening live.
What do you think your advice for the young people continue to do?
What can we do to help the struggle?
Well,
You've been listening to Mumia Abu-Jamal live, calling from Pennsylvania prison. You may not have been able to hear it as clearly as we had hoped, but as you know, technology is not always at its best. But you can feel the spirit, certainly. And we're going to continue on tonight with our broadcast. I can tell you, this room is filled with so much power, so much energy. You know, folks are just, you know, fantastic. That's all I can really say. It's just absolutely fantastic. We're going to continue on with tonight's program, and we'll be going live until, I believe, 10 o'clock. We're going to hear from Mark Taylor, Educators for Lumia. It's up right about now.
Quality is that all was not like what we know when Lumia called into our classroom. He sold it to my class a number of times at Princeton Seminary. He said, Lord, if the Dr. Fernando is a good colleague, he is one of our teachers. And I think we heard enough of his voice tonight to know what our walking orders and our marching orders are. Thank you, Lumia, for that call. As teachers now, we turn to two of our colleagues, Michael Ford and Lynn Fine, who have been asked both of them to take stage at this point. We are not unmindful of the kind of contradiction that it is for our movement that we, the people, to be in the Constitution better. They have made this place available. They have helped us be here, but it is hosted by the National Lawyers Guild. We want to talk about why the Constitution often doesn't work for many people, and we want to talk about the violations of the Constitution, you know, in Lumia's case. And we have two attorneys that can help us with us today. Each one will take 10 minutes to illumine us on these points. First, I want to introduce Mr. Michael Ford. Michael Ford. Michael Ford is a Philadelphia defense lawyer. He's also a professor at Temple University and president of Philadelphia Milton Ford Movement. His law degree is from Ohio State University School of Law. I am going to introduce you now, please, Michael Ford.
First of all, before I get started, I'd like you all to give yourselves a rousing round of applause for supporting the guests and the new institute call. As the speaker said, I'm going to make sure that I stick to my 10 minutes because we got so many other speakers who have some powerful information to share. Three things basically I'm going to talk about, and I'll make sure I keep them within the 10 minutes. First is about juvenile law. You might ask, how does juvenile law have anything to do with Lumia's case? I'll explain that. Then I'm going to talk to you about the death penalty in general. And finally, I'm going to get you some specifics about Lumia's case. Many of you, I'm sure, listened to WRD 900 AM. And if you did, you heard the bullshit from Mr. Lynn Abraham, I mean, Seth Hillary. Let me get you the specifics right now. First thing you go after juvenile law, the same system that tried to murder Lumia Abu-Jamal is the same system that put kids in prison for life for longer than any other state in the United States. More than Texas, more than Mississippi, more than Alabama. And if you think it's bad that Pennsylvania has more juveniles and youngest 14 years old serving life without the possibility of parole, more than any state in the country, and it gets worse. Pennsylvania has more juveniles serving life without parole than any state in any country on the planet. That's the same system that tried to murder Lumia Abu-Jamal. There are 450 juveniles, grown men now, many of them in their 60s and their 70s, who made mistakes as kids, 40, 15 years old, and that system, that Pennsylvania criminal justice system, that again, tried to murder Lumia, treats kids most of them poor white kids, black kids, and Latino kids. That's the same system we have to contend with. Let me jump down to my presidency argument, because this is critical. Anybody, I'm sure we have enlightened folks here, so I'm preaching to the choir, but those of you out there who think that there are situations where the death penalty is warranted, let me just make some brief arguments. The first argument is that if you believe in a God, if you're Christian, Muslim, Jewish, anything, if you believe in any God, then death penalty is sinful. If you don't believe in God, it's immoral and it's unethical. Under every circumstance, why is it sinful? Why is it immoral? And why is it unethical? It's very simple. We as humans don't create life. We procreate. So something before us created life. If we didn't create life, we don't have the authority to destroy life. So to the extent that you support the death penalty, you're killing the creation of the Creator. And those who say, well, anybody with death row, they should be in because they committed a single murder. It's the eye for an eye concept. Now, I said, okay, in space, eye for an eye does sound reasonable. But let's take it to a logical conclusion. If we believe in killing killers, then why don't we rob robbers? Why don't we kidnap kidnappers? Even better. Because you know when you talk about the death penalty, there's a state employee that injects you with that lethal injection. So there's a state employee who gets paid $6,000 to kill. If that's what it is, why don't we raise it? Why don't we hire a state employee whose job it is to rape convicted rapists? And you might say, well, that's obscene. That's outrageous. That's my point. If rapist is outrageous, then how much more outrageous is killing killers? It's all uncivilized. It's all barbaric. It's all inhuman. And it's all outrageous. And let me just wrap this up with a 3-4 minute discussion about why the media is not only just where the legal part comes in. We as lawyers come into court in criminal cases and we argue that our client is not guilty. When we say our client is not guilty, we're not saying he didn't do it. We're saying the prosecution can't prove it. There's a difference between being not guilty and being innocent. Not guilty means they didn't prove it. Innocent means you didn't do it. Well, in Lomita's case, here's a brother who's not only legally not guilty, but he's also factually innocent. And if you have a man who's legally not guilty and also factually innocent, it was a great day the other day when Mr. Lillian, I mean, Seth Williams, announced that he wasn't going to speak to death penalty. That's a tremendous victory. But it's only half of it. Those of you who know football, it's pretty much we got to be red zone. So we got to score a touchdown. We got to get to the end zone. Red zone means nothing. That's not 3 points. It's not 2 points. It's not even 6 points. We want 7 points. A 7 point is touchdown. Now, let me wrap it up by saying this. First of all, anytime you look at the criminal justice system, it's really a criminal injustice system. I don't have any faith at all in the way the system works. In fact, I always say that I don't go to court to get justice as a lawyer. I don't go to court to get justice. I go to court to expose the injustice. And because that's my goal, I never lost a case in my career because it's always injustice. Even though Seth Williams has gone ballistic about some judges, these judges who in effect kind of ruled in Lomita's favor are not bleeding heart liberal left-wing judges. On the federal district court level, because the way it goes from the federal level, you have the district court, circuit court of appeals, and Supreme Court. Well, the judges who ruled in Lomita's favor regarding death were not left-wing liberal judges. These were judges of the federal court appointed by none other than Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush. if these right-wing racist fanatics can see the law halfway, what the hell is wrong with the liberty? Let me back it up for the last 2 minutes by putting up some key facts about what this case does. Remember, as a lawyer, I'm not just saying he's legally not guilty. I'm saying he's factually innocent. These are the three strongest points I can use when you're debating with people. Remember these three key points. The third point has two or three parts to it. Anytime somebody uses a firearm to shoot and kill somebody, the first thing the police do is they get the bullet out of the body and match that bullet to the gun. Well, they had the officer on the ground, they had a bullet inside of him, and they had the gun they claimed whom he had. They claimed whom he had. And by the way, these points I'm making right now are not debatable. These are all facts from the case. So there's nothing anybody can say about me making these up. These are irrefutable facts. Well, when they tried to match the gun they claimed whom he had to the bullet inside Faulkner, it was inconclusive. Inconclusive. They were. You say that he is a crazy black revolutionary, just murdered just the wrong white cop. He got the gun claimed in Lumia's hand. He got the bullet off of his body. How could it be inconclusive? That's fair to me. The second argument would suggest that the court did not more. I do murder cases. I do death penalty murder cases. When my client shoots somebody and the police catch him instantly, the first thing they do is what we want to call a neutron activation test, a powder from test. It's basically a gunpowder test. Well, you got him right there on the ground. You screamed and fired a gun. Check his hand for gunpowder residue. Can you believe they said they forgot? They didn't check his hand. But they checked the jacket or the sweater Lumia had to find out that the gunpowder residue on his jacket came from Faulkner's gun. So if you could tell about the gunpowder on the jacket, why not the gunpowder on him? I believe they checked Lumia's hand. I believe it came back negative, but they couldn't say that. So they had to say, we forgot to check his hand. The final point, they claimed Lumia had a gun. And the gun they claimed Lumia had is a 38 caliber. But the bullet inside Faulkner, from their own medical records expert, was a 44 caliber. Anybody who knows anything about guns knows that a 44 caliber bullet can't fit in a 38 caliber gun. On the appellate level, when the question came up and the form was shown to the medical examiner, 44 caliber, 38 caliber, he said it was a typo. He actually said it was a type of thing that either irrefutable fact. I'm going to wrap this up in 1 minute because we have other comments from other people. That's the first thing. I got 1 minute. It's now 58 seconds. So I'll clean it up in 58 seconds. Other thing, during the closing argument, the prosecutor said that Lumia stood over the officer, execution style, fired a gun between his eyes. That's physically impossible. Why? Because the wound that Lumia sustained was a downward wound. From his chest down to the stomach. If he had been standing over the cop, Lumia would have shot from the stomach up to the chest. In order to be shot from the chest down to the stomach, he could not, I repeat, could not have been standing over the cop. And finally, they claim Lumia said, I shot the motherfucker, I hope he died. Well, that statement didn't even come out 64 days later, and when they asked the officer, why did he wait so long, he said he was traumatized. This whole case is traumatized. Three to me.
This is from Michael Ford, who is one of the attorneys here in Philadelphia.
Dear Michael Ford.
We now turn to Mr. Leonard Klein. Leonard Klein is a law professor and former chair of the Administration of Justice Program at Rutgers University, formerly Nelson Mandela U.S. Attorney. He has served on international commissions of inquiry and worked for the release of political prisoners across the world. He is the permanent representative of the United Nations for the International Association of Democratic Lawyers. Mr. Hines, please respect him.
Breathe, Mumia. Thank you. Good It's good to see my good friend, Billy Ferguson, and Brenda. This question is for the brothers and sisters, the last time I saw Mumia when the legal visit was about 5 years ago. This brother is strong, and notwithstanding the torture, psychological torture that he endures, he has no problem. When I listened to him today, he was strong today as he was 5 years ago. Mumia and other brothers on death row are kept in solitary confinement. That is, they are denied any human contact, either with each other or with close relatives or friends. Visits are conducted through heavy bulletproof plexiglass with the inmate in chains, shackled as an animal. Mumia has had to endure this for 30 years. 30 years on Pennsylvania's death row. 30 years under the threat of imminent death. It is my proposal to you, sir, as the permanent representative of the International Association of Democratic Lawyers. I am prepared to recommend to my organization that we launch an international campaign for the release of Mumia Abu-Jamal, on the basis, partly the decision out of the Second Circuit, that his death sentence was illegal, and therefore he was wrongly held on death row for 30 years. Wrongly held on death row in violation of the Eighth Amendment to the United States Constitution, which prohibits cruel and unusual punishment. Was also in violation of the 1984 International Convention Against Torture, which was signed by the United States of America in 1988 and ratified by the Congress of the United by the Senate of the United States in 1990. This makes this international treaty binding on national law, pursuant to Article 2 of the United States Constitution. Now, some of you may say, what have you been smoking on? That you believe that we can't get any kind of a relief in the U.S. I have argued, I have written over the years, that the courts have been no friend to black people. It is the Supreme Court of the United States that granted us a legalized plea. It is the same court that declared us three-fifths of men. So the court has never been the friend of us. Mumia is not facing death today, not because of churches or the courts. It is because of you. The power of the people. But we have to use some predictions that we find within the system and use it to build our gates. What do I mean by that? Just 2 months ago, a justice of the United States Supreme Court,
by the name of Stephen Brown.
Who had an opinion? A dissent.
This is a case in which a man by the name of Manuel Valle has petitioned to save an execution. Valle was in prison for 33 years. Supreme Court denied his petition. And Justice Breyer made a very interesting and forceful argument, which I believe induced the free movement. Breyer said that Manuel Valle, who had spent 33 years on death row, that amounted to cruel and unusual punishment, and pointed out that foreign courts had ruled that living for decades under the threat of imminent death is a form of psychological torture. On October 18th, the United Nations Rapporteur on Torture, man by the name of Juan Mendez, he reported to the 66th General Assembly Third Committee that he was proposing a ban, a worldwide ban, on the practice of prolonged solitary confinement. I believe that we can file a petition with the Human Rights Council pursuant to FSR Resolution 1503 and 728, which we will charge that the practice of prolonged solitary confinement, individuals on death row, amounts to cruel and unusual punishment in violation of both U.S. law and international law. As part of this campaign, this international campaign, I propose that we also submit the case of Mumia Abu-Jamal to a committee against torture pursuant to Article 20 of the covenant that was signed by the United States. That is a treaty between the United States and the international community. Article 20 provides that any case where an individual has been subject to torture, that case can be brought before the United Nations and that it will be a hearing. I want to thank you for the opportunity.
You have just heard two of our speakers articulate how our chant, Free Mumia, will be translated to one that is a repeat of Mumia back into families and communities. And it is us all. Free Mumia, and I turn the program over to our co-host, Pam Africa.
One more. It is my honor to introduce one of the baddest poets in our dedicated literary award, and put it back because she's one of the baddest post-sign poets to ever walk the face of the earth. My poet, Amelia. Thank you.
Thank you. I really, it was a very clear presentation. Glad to go face it now, y'all can run it. You may not even, you can run it straight ahead. It was a very clear presentation. I want to read this poem that got me in trouble. I didn't know before that they could actually put you in jail for writing a poem. The first one starts with a little locum. The locum is the Afro-American version of haiku. The Swahili word for Holocaust is Nakusa. So if you have your
locum,
who made the laws? Who made Bush president?
We believe the Confederate flag need to be lying. We talk about democracy and be lying. Who the beast in Revelation 2:6-6 who decides Jesus get crucified? Who's the devil on the real side? Who got this to be Armenian genocide? We the biggest terrorists. We change the Bible. We kill the most people. We do the most evil. We don't worry about survival. Who has the colony? Who stole the most land? Who ruled the world? Who said it was not illegal? Who did the biggest executioner? Who oil? Who won more oil? Who told you what you think that lady is trying out is a lie? Who found them late? Make it a statement. Who paid the CIA? Who knew the bomb was going to blow? Who know why the terrorists learned to fly in Florida and San Diego? Who know why five of the families were showing the explosion and cracking their sides at the notion? Who need fossil fuels? Who ain't going nowhere? Who make the credit cards? Who get the biggest tax cut? Who walked out of the conference against racism? Who killed Malcolm Kennedy and his brother? Who killed Dr. King? Who would want such a thing in our relation to murder of Lincoln? Who invaded Grenada? Who made money from apartheid? Who beat the Irish economy? Who overthrew Chile and Nicaragua later? Who killed David Domingo? Fish Tani? The same ones who killed Vigo, Cabral, Laguna, Allende, Che Guevara, Sandino, who killed Kabila, the ones who wasted Lumumba, Malay, Ben Shabab, Sisters died, Ralph Featherstone, Little Father, Knocked Up Mandela, Beruba, Jemima, Asana, Maria, Gara, Dasho, Hannah, Faye Tucky, who killed William, Fred Jansen, Linda Everett, Michael Smith, Walter Rodney, was it the one who tried to pour them to death? Who tried to keep the Nicanese? Who put a price on linen's head? Who put the Jews in ovens? And who helped them do it? Who set America first and okayed the yellow star? So, whoa! Who killed Rosa Luxemburg? Lee Mack. Who murdered the Rosenberg and all the good people? Ice, torture, assassinated, vanished? Who got this in Algeria, Libya, Haiti, Iran, Iraq, Saudi, Kuwait, Lebanon, Syria, Egypt, Jordan, Palestine? Who put a few bands in the Congo? Who did it? Who put the Germans and the Indians blanket? Who fought the Trailer Peter? Who lost the Maine and started the Spanish-American War? Who got Sharon back in power? Who backed Batista, Hitler, Bilbo, Chiang Kai-shek? Who decided the affirmative action had to go? Reconstruction, the New Deal, the New Frontier, the Great Society. Who knew Tom had Clarence work for? Who knew Google coming out the colon sound? Who knew what kind of freezer is a kind of laser? Who gave family to be initiated? Who gave genius awards to Homo Rufus subsidiary? Who overthrew Nkrumah? Bishop? Who poisoned Robeson? Who tried to put the boys in jail? Who framed Matt Brown to be on me? Who framed the Rosenberg, Rice, the Scottsdale Boys, the Hollywood Fans? Who set the Reichstag fire? Who knew the world Jason was going to get done? Who knew who told 4,000 Israeli workers at the Twin Towers to stay home that day? Why did Sharon stay there? Who? Explosion now, the newspaper say the devastation should be seen. Who makes money from war? Who makes dough from fear and lies? Who wants the world like it is? Who wants the world to be ruled by imperialism and national oppression and terror and violence and harm and poverty? Who's the ruler of hell? Who's most powerful? Who you know has seen God?
Everybody's seen the devil. Like an owl exploding in your life, in your brain, in your tongue. Like an owl who knows the devil all night, all day. You listen like an owl exploding in fire. You hear the question drive in terrible pain. Like the whistle of a crazy dog. Like the acid bomb of the fire of hell.
Thank you.
That was called glory. It is my great pleasure to keep us moving on the road to bring the and it is my great honor to bring to the stage the panelists of the second section, which is entitled Building Our Movement, and our moderator is Dr. C.J. Rashad. Dr. D.J. Rashad, because we were colleagues once upon a time at Trinity College. And I saw and heard and witnessed Professor Rashad's very radical, complex critique of American society, of capitalism, the history of the Third World. And every time he spoke in a language that was accessible, and he spoke in a language that was humanistic. And at Trinity College, in the coldness of that WASP institution, I walked on along the long walk, and when I saw him, I saw light. So it is really a pleasure for me to introduce BJ. BJ organized Agents for Mumia in the 1990s. He is also the author of a phenomenal book entitled The Dark Nation, A People's History of the Third World. He is an unequivocal supporter of Mumia, and he's been with us for a long time. I introduce to you Dr. BJ Rashad.
Good evening. I think we have a support panel, so we get right to it. The point of struggle is that it is what keeps us human. So our panel is about movement. The first panelist we have is by video, and that will be the author of a remarkable book which Munir spoke about, The New Negro. And so we hear first from Michelle Alexander.
So many people are joining together to demand justice for Mumia. Justice that has been served many, many, many years too late. The struggle for justice in Mumia's case is part of a larger movement to end mass incarceration in America. It is demonization of poor people of color and all those who are willing to stand with them in the fight for social and racial justice in America. Over the last several decades, our nation has seen an explosion in imprisonment, a wave of punitiveness that washed over the United States as racially divisive politics produce scapegoat and demonize poor people of color. In a rush to judgment, much of what occurred in the media case occurred countless times in courtrooms across America as poor people, especially poor people of color, have been shunned behind bars, labeled criminals and felons, and relegated to a permanent second-class status for life, often stripped of many of the rights supposedly won in the civil rights movement, including the right to vote, the right to serve on jury, the right to free of legal discrimination, employment, housing, access to education, public benefits. So many of the rights supposedly won in the civil rights movement. So many of the gains that were made during that movement, and so many of the human rights that Martin Luther King Jr., Malcolm X, Ellen Baker, and so many other freedom fighters were fighting for have been eviscerated in the era of mass incarceration as the clock has been turned back on racial progress in the United States and a vast new racial gender path has been formed. So many people are seeking justice. Justice has been as elusive for them as it has been for Mumia. So let our efforts on behalf of Mumia be an inspiration to all those who are seeking justice for their family members and loved ones behind ours and let our movement be broader than any one individual case. Let our work on behalf of the media be an inspiration for all those who are seeking to end this new practice.
So we're going to turn now to a brilliant young scholar, Dr. Martin, who has a book called The Classroom of Aesthetics, Conversations on Black Lives in America, Mumia Abu Jamal and Dr. Martin. Welcome, Martin. I'm so excited to see so many people here. For the purpose of liberating Mumia Abu Jamal. When Mumia and I wrote that book, I had met Mumia, and to me, he was just a case. He was a case that I was working on since I was a kid. He was a car, he was a struggle, he was something I was working on. But for the last 2-3 years, I've had the opportunity to spend time with Mumia, talk with me every Friday. Y'all messed up my car. And over the course of that time, I put out saying that a human being, as a person, as a father, as a husband, as someone who needs to be home, as someone whose family needs him home, as someone whose community needs him to be home, it's so easy to make these people into cases. But these are people. We cannot allow the same these people into us, these people into China. It's our responsibility to keep the spotlight on that fundamental system of humanity. And that's the way it is not to remind the world of those people who are engaged in justice, not just in the United States, but in Guantanamo. All of our goals is that those individuals are in fact human beings. And on Wednesday, we had an enormous victory for those human beings. For all of humanity, when the Supreme Court made decisions back in April, and now in October, when we had another victory on Wednesday, we had a sense of joy. We had a sense of success, and indeed, we should be more out there because we make that happen. We make that happen. The Supreme Court can make that happen. Any law, any struggle, any victory we have had, they have all been co-opted and they have been written in the blood of people who have been willing to sacrifice and struggle. Women have been sacrificed for the struggle. Women have been sacrificed for the sacrifice. Women have been sacrificed for the blood. Women have been sacrificed for the struggle. Women have been sacrificed for the blood. We can't stop there. 30 years is a long time of struggle. But we can't stop there. We should celebrate Wednesday. We need to pat ourselves on the back. We need to stop on set sometime and catch our breath before we keep climbing. But 30 years is a long time to be haunted by that hole, no doubt. But 30 years is a long time to be incarcerated for crime and business. 30 years is a long time to be with your family. 30 years is a long time to be involved. We need to think about what the thing is. Think about struggle. That's a book for me, but for all political prisoners. And when I say political prisoners, I say every black body paid in the United States of America is a political prisoner. So what do we do? We can leave here feeling good. We can leave here feeling happy. We can leave here shout. But that ain't going to liberate political prisoners. That's not going to get the work done. We need to do something else. What is the next stage? I'm going to take my seat in a minute, but I want to talk about what do we do when we leave here, family? The first thing we must do is ask different questions. We can all have some fun together and you can see that way and say, oh my gosh, that way has got some religion. That way has got some heart. That way has got a conscience that he decided to stop pursuing. You can even read his president and say, he didn't want to bog down his courts anymore. They didn't fight with the man, they didn't teach him for 30 years, they come in on a Sunday, they get paid. Well, the father said, no. The state doesn't have
doing this. But we have to broaden that conversation. We have to take it out of balance so that we don't just exhaust the level that we have. We can also have this about Mamiya, although it is about Mamiya. We have to ask ourselves, how do we end up in 2011 with 2.5 million black bodies incarcerated? When there are only 250,000 incarcerated in 1970, 1960, how do we increase the prison population tenfold? Create a generation of criminals? Or do you create a state that's committed to criminalizing black bodies? We have to stop that. We look at drugs, we look at all these so-called social services. I think that Columbia University, if I was in my campus right now, you know how many people I could arrest for public drugs? You throw in the time job, still possession of marijuana. Most of them. The groups are the victims. They take my control, that's what I'm saying. But we ain't looking at 70% of these men in prison come from three counties, and it ain't Westchester. We have to change the logic of the day that says that black bodies are worthy of incarceration, containment, and even legal force. We have to change that by asking different questions. Stop asking what it means to drive our black tracks and what it means to control our race. Ask different questions.
Here in Philadelphia, 30th year anniversary of the Chesapeake Mania, and of course 30 years of this incarceration. We go back live.
Yeah. have a speech made after Lumia, feeling the support from the family on behalf of Lumia because he couldn't be there. It's very exciting that it's in the worldwide movement. It's very important that it steps the repressive racist state from legally mentioning Lumia in 1995 and 1999. It goes to show, as Brother Many Times said earlier, that it's not what goes on in the courts that are decisive, but it is the mass struggle and movement that are decisive. And even Brother Lumia knows this better than anyone else. When you listen to the answer that he gave to all the questions tonight, what was the common thread that he said? It was join organizations, it's the mass movements that are decisive. This is really, really important activism on every level. That even in periods of reaction, we have been experiencing for over 30 years now since Reaganism. Major victories have shown that it can be won, especially when you have someone like Lumia, who continues to resist unspeakable, oppressive, torturous conditions for the past 30 years. Lumia's resistance to his individual condition and thus becoming a worldwide symbol of resistance to all forms of capitalist oppression has inspired many of us to stay active in the struggle for freedom and to also free other political figures like Dennis Healthcare. Make sure Sarah Davis, Jonathan Colbert, and many, many others, the Puerto Rican political prisoners. But also, Lumia has inspired us to remain active in many other struggles as well. Well, my time is almost up. But I did want to talk about the fact that out of many periods of reaction have come social upheaval. And I really want to talk about the Occupy Wall Street movement. This is an unprecedented period that we're in today, sisters and brothers, because of what happened on September 17th, when Occupy Wall Street just took the world by storm. Because of its beautiful and defiant character, it has changed the political landscape and atmosphere of this country and around the world. It stands to occupy everything that represents the status quo that is Wall Street greed, especially the bailout of the bank, and the trillions of dollars in light of this unprecedented global economic crisis, has imbued new life into our existing movement and has propelled new activists in the struggle of all walks of life. And this is something that our brother Lumia has written on a number of times. The Occupy Wall Street movement has helped to open up to a limited space for so many issues and struggles that have been both marginalized and alienated. And this includes the struggle between the way I move them all. And I just want to say just one thing about Occupy Philadelphia. This is very, very, we have to take courage to occupy Philadelphia. Even though it was shut down yet last week by the police, the same police that are trying to legally lynch Lumia. The fact is that it's a month of many accomplishments. It has helped to open political space for the Lumia, for the Lumia movement, led by international concerned family and friends of Lumia, both of all, especially its heroic leader, Sister Pam Patrick. And we have to applaud Occupy Philadelphia for helping to expose and broaden the role that the police play in society, especially in making the police misconduct. about the landscape to the racist occupation of Black and Latino people in the Philadelphia and around the country, and of course to the shutdown of Occupy Philadelphia. So in closing, I really want to make a special appeal to Occupy Philadelphia and other Occupy movements to continue to work with the 30-year-old Free Mumia movement in the struggle to complete its freedom and win victory. Will we satisfy the Mumia staying in prison for the rest of his life? Really? We want to take it to the next level. And all political prisoners, please occupy the prison. And let us occupy everything necessary until we're being free. Free all political prisoners, right? No one can steal a birthday and try to get children.
From Revolution Point, National Union, Local 1199, and from the anti-immigrant, from the immigrant rights movement, etc. Like
this. Let me say that it's an honor and a privilege to be standing here with you today representing the 360,000 members of 1199 SCA. Thank you for inviting us. And I would also like to express to my fellow union members, retired and active, that came with me from New York today. Thank you for joining me. In Africa, revolutionary, from the week before, American Cabral, said many years ago that solidarity is not an act of charity. Solidarity is an act of defense of mutual interest. And for all, it enables us defending and demanding freedom for Mumia Abu-Jamal is also the defense of workers in this country and workers wherever they are. The response that will tell us that there is reason to rejoice, to celebrate, because we will defend the sector. We rejoice, we celebrate, the sisters and brothers, compañeras and compañeros. We don't have the option to wait another 10, 10 years to get to the house. I am tired of being sick, tired of seeing young African Americans, young Latinos, lying in jail, and as Professor Alexander said in the book, we now have more men of color in jail than we ever had southern slavery in this country. It is time to put a stop to it. It is time to put a stop to it. We need not only across America to say, free the media right now, free all political prisoners, but we need to raise our voices around the world. The same way that the bankers, the capitalists, Wall Street, the tribe is globalizing their economic power, we need to globalize people's power and demand free the media. To continue the struggle, our support, our participation, educating our members and our places of work
They all have a commitment that the struggle for Bolivia is the struggle for worker justice. The struggle for Bolivia is the struggle for economic growth of the workers. And that we will continue to commit ourselves and to work with you, and to march, and to chant, and to occupy until Bolivia is out of jail. Libertad para Bolivia, yes! Libertad para Bolivia, yes!
In 1985, the state decided to press this area of bombardment inside the city of Philadelphia and bomb the Moon House. There were two survivors, one a child and the other an adult. The adult is with us today. Ramona Africa, Minister of Education.
Respect movement, that's true. But I've heard that throughout the day.
But it only takes one. It only takes one. And we know that there are plenty of people in prison who take the promise of release or money and do whatever the system wants. We know that. We need to be aware of it. We need to be ever vigilant about brothers. And when we talk about asking questions, ask yourself, why are these people so desperate, so adamant about him, Tony Abu Jamal? They never forget his name. And they say it because, well, he's still one of our own. He's still the top. But none of them can tell you the name of people accused of or convicted of killing a cop 6 months ago, a year ago, 3 years ago. They don't know their name. Can't tell you their name. But they know the name of Tony Abu Jamal. Now, why are they so hateful about me? Why do they feel the same way about the man accused of killing their president, John F. Kennedy, or his brother, Robert Kennedy, you know, or the man that killed John Lennon? Or what about baby killing? You don't see the same attitude about people accused of those crimes as you see coming from these people about killing the meat. And who knows what we're looking at? We've dealt with these people for a long time. These are the people, like was said earlier, they dropped a bomb on our family, burnt babies alive, burnt our sisters and brothers alive, our animals alive. We know what we're dealing with. And people need not hallucinate about this. Mumia, you know, she is important to all of us, our brothers, and we are very, very concerned about them. We tend to be ever vigilant on our brothers, and we never going to stop fighting for our brothers. And we're innocent, and okay, you get off the death row, fine. But life in prison without parole is not acceptable. It is not acceptable. Not acceptable. Never going to stop fighting for our brothers. We ain't never going to stop from fucking black ass sisters. We're going to put an end to this kind of injustice. That's what the Boom Organization is committed to. We're committed to bringing our brother home, and we're committed to continuing to fight to bring his sister down. They want to bring our brother Mumia down. They want to try to bring the Boom Organization down. Well, we intend to bring them down. And this day is determined as they are to get their way, to win this little contest that they feel like they're involved in, because that's how they see it. Just as determined as they are to have their way, we have to be twice, 3 times, 10 times more determined to put things right, to fight and never stop fighting to put things right. That's new position. That's new position. So we say, on the moon, long live revolution, long live the spirit of the system. Long live our brother Mumia Abu Jamal. Long live all freedom fighters. All those who dare to fight. Stand up against the
a little too late. We can't let this happen
free Lumia. We need to think about freeing Lumia in the next number of years. That is a possibility. Mubarak thought that he would be in Egypt a dictator forever, and within 27 days, 24 days, he was out. We never imagined that the New York Times would be talking about class war until Occupy Wall Street occupied Wall Street. We never imagined that Wisconsin would happen. We never imagined that a team might be bold. Freeing Lumia is not a utopian dream. The fact that there's a breach right now, that the Supreme Court has essentially said that we've been right all these years, is opening up the possibility of actually dreaming large dreams and freeing Lumia. We're asking you to join two task forces, or one of two task forces. The first is the challenge to the DA to release Lumia. The second is the challenge to Eric Holder to investigate this case, to conduct a civil rights investigation. So we're going to be working at the local level, and we're going to be working at the national level. We need your support. We, the people, are going to free Lumia. Please email us at civilrightsinvestigation@gmail.com. You can find this in the packet you got when you arrived, or you can join CA Challenge now at gmail.com. And also, if you are interested in working in the international aspect of this movement, please say so in your email. So we're going to free Lumia, but before we do that, we're going to launch a phenomenal film, which will come imminently to a theater near you. It is the best documentary I've seen. It's called The Long Distance Revolutionary, A Journey with Lumia Abu-Jamal, and it was produced by Street Legal Cinema in association with Prison Radio. The director is Steve Victoria, and you will see a two-minute clip. It's going to be out this summer, and it's going to blow this nation and this world big time.
I see from Pennsylvania, get local, a bright, shining, highly recognized tale. When Congress and our alignment serve as their legislative leader, they will be not a small party. They will be jail terrorists, wholesale terrorists, or they might be terrorists. The president is telling them to hear our kids and rules of punishment, or feline. A fact that I think it's going to be more than I know it's different with what the hell is going on. And we're reporting that some 15, 14 years old is being tell the truth about the operation of our power. This is what happens.
I'm so happy to be here. First, thank you so much, Spider-Man Africa.
Joanna Fernandez, so many friends in this room, and of course, all anywhere. 40 years ago, on December 4th, the United States government killed the 21-year-old Black Panther, Fred Hampton. Why don't you live for the people? Asked Fred Hampton. Why don't you struggle for the people? Why don't you die for the people? Umi Abu Jamal lived for the people. We must learn to live for the people. We must learn to struggle for the people. Umi Abu Jamal has been in jail for 30 years. His body is in jail, but his mind is free. Too many people, their bodies are free, but their minds are in jail. They said something was my death, said Munir. They want my silence. For 30 years, Munir has not been silent. Until the years to come, we will not be silent. We have to be the echoes of Munir's lack of silence. There is no more death penalty for Munir. There should be no more fail for Munir. The Rome Statute is set up the International Criminal Court understands the life sentence to be 25 years. If the court sentences you to life in prison for crimes against humanity, it would take a great deal for you to face more than 25 years behind bars. There is no death penalty at the International Criminal Court. Umia al-Jamal has served more than 5 years in excess of what the International Criminal Court recommends as the highest sentence. A perpetrator of genocide and crimes against humanity, as well as a war criminal, would serve a shorter sentence than that which is already being served by Munir Abu Jamal. It is too easy to say that the government in the United States is cruel. Governments do not have a personality. They are neither cruel nor kind. What governments have are policies, and these policies are based on a logic that emerges out of a political and moral perspective. This logic that comes out of a moral and political perspective is what we consider an ideology. To understand why Munir Abu Jamal has been in prison for longer than a war criminal sentenced by the International Criminal Court, we need to understand the ideology of the United States government. What is the ideology of the United States government? Property about people. Those who carry the property are criminals. Humanity in this ideology is criminal. We are in a national constitution center. There is a constitution that you can see around the corner. It was the good side of history that made the abstract ideas of the constitution come alive. It was the laborers, the unionists, the abolitionists, the suffragists, the anarchists, the socialists, the unemployed, the indigenous, the dignified, the civil rights struggler, the feminists, the gay, the lesbians. This motley crew, this diverse range of below, gave life to be whole, to be self-evident. Power conceives nothing without demand, said Lord Frederick Douglass. It never did, and it never will. The heir to this long tradition of resistance from the margins of American society is now on our shoulders, on the shoulders of the Clean India campaign, of the migrant strike movement, of Occupy, the indigenous, the unemployed, been dignified. Without our struggle and our vision, the bad side of history would reduce us all to bare life. Everybody dies, but not everybody lives. To live is to dream and to teach, to have vision above the ordinary, and to have shelter and warmth. Property and power, those who are our 1% can live. We have, over the course of the past century, accumulated more wealth than the 99%. 1% of the population owns more than the rest of the population combined. The United States is in more unequal society today than Greece, where the financial problems have paralyzed Greek society. The United States is the most unequal society in the advanced industrial world. For 99%, the American dream is the American nightmare. Inequality is not natural. It is not normal. It is the consequences of the 1%, the bad side of history, having their hands on the levers of social policy. What benefits the 1% is seen to be rational. What does not benefit them is seen to be irrational. Human reason is reduced to the logic of the government we account for. Our 1% does not allow our tax money to be spent on the social and public good, on public education, on public health care, on public transportation, on public green spaces, on public literature, on public art, on public hip-hop, on public philosophy. Instead, the 1% prefers to spend our money on building up the military state and our prisons. Since 9/11, our government has spent $7.6 trillion on the war on Afghanistan and Iraq, on the hundreds of cases that trouble countries around the world, and on homeland security. The government has gone to war against its own people. The United States has the highest incarceration rate in the world. Our per capita incarceration rate is 7 times higher than that of China. 25% of the world's poorest people live in the United States. Among them sits Mumiyan Abu Jamal, reading a book, writing an essay. The United States spends more on prison than on education. It costs more money per year to hold a human being in the New Jersey State Prison in Trenton than to educate a human being at Princeton University. Trenton State is more expensive than Princeton, all in the name of justice. Everybody dies, but not everybody lives. The government has gone to war against the planet, running military operations from the Atlas Mountains to the Hindu Kush, threatening Iran, sending troops into Uganda, Colombia, God knows where else, bombing from drones, assassinating people, even U.S. citizens, against the limits of international law. All in the name of peace. In the name of peace, we conduct permanent war. Resentment breeds in the alleyways of the world as they see the American eagle breathe fire into their homes and communities. Since 2004, drone attacks alone have killed 2,500 civilians in northern Pakistan. Peace is never going to be won through resentment. The government has gone to war and spent $7.6 trillion. To pay for that war and prison, it didn't raise money from the 1%, but gave them a tax rate. This year, the 1% earned an average tax cut larger than the average income of the remaining 99%. The average tax cut for 1% was greater than the average income of the remaining 99%. 99% earns less in income than the 1% earns in tax rate. And yet, to pay for the downturn, the government turns to the 99%. The 99% must pay for the wars and prisons with our children in the trenches. The 99% must pay for the wars and prisons with our paid nothing for the laws and prison. Everybody dies, but not everybody lives. As Martin Luther King Jr. preached in 1968, just before he was killed, only when it is dark enough can you see the stars. Only when it is dark enough can you see the stars. It is now dark enough. Movement, the anti-war movement, the Occupy movement, the labor movement, the anti-racist movement, the feminist movement, so many others. These are our stars. These stars allow history to bring life into our society. These stars allow history to bring life. We demand life, we demand a voice, we demand that foreclosure change immediately. We demand life, we demand an end to the use of drugs. We demand that the U.S. military separate overseas places. We demand life. We demand an end to the war. We demand that the capitalists pay for their own mess. We demand an end to capitalism.
Thank you. limited little company has a gift for all of you. It's a wonderful session. It's a speech for you. It's for all of you here. It was brought out very quickly and shoved it from New York in a big, heavy box. And it's 5 bucks each. And there'll be people outside to get your money and give you one of these things. It's yours for Mumia. And it's thrilling. It's wonderful. And it'll give you energy to continue the fight. This event is marvelous. And there's got to be a few more of them. The last one will be with Mumia here first. That every time we turn around, we will ask for money. This beautiful hall is great, and we thank you for giving it to us, but we had a big gift. Thank you. We have paid $6,000 for this hall. I can't tell you how much money it costs to do the Tom Cart and the elegant leadership. When we said we needed a mic, great, that's another $200. We needed more chairs for this. We knew it would be a lot of people. Oh, that would be $600 more. It wound up being $15,000. Now, we're going to have more demonstrations, and I'm hoping one of them is going to be a petition that the groups in this room created to Eric Holden to have an investigation about the lousy trial that Mumia got. And he hasn't even answered it, even though there are thousands of names on that petition. And I want to suggest that when the spring comes, we go to Washington to the department where Eric Holden lives and occupy the Department of Justice.
It's been wonderful to be here, to say the least. I mean, it's like, it's just so powerful. And for those who had any doubt that we'll be able to evolve, Will is completely free, I can assure you, with what we're seeing and feeling here tonight. You can best believe Mumia will be free very, very soon.
It's our National Lawyers Guild. Send a check to the National Lawyers Guild. Within 3 weeks, you will get a letter of thanks. We can use it as a tax deduction. We need your money. We need your energy, but most of all, we need you to continue the fight so we can have one more celebration. Great, Mumia, with us. Thank you. Okay, one more. Tell me that's a fine night. And we didn't get to raise it much higher. And I want to point out that the people who have come here and are come because we want to free Mumia. We want to release Mumia. Our lives and strong from death row. And we got people who used to pay as far as Kentucky. Massachusetts.
commitment to do the work, to do the work. I'm just going to say to Grandma and Mother, bad!
It's been truly an exciting and very, very productive night. Please tune in tomorrow. We will do a special broadcast tomorrow from the other event that's scheduled for tomorrow. And with our regular live program, the New Day Resurrection and Liberation. Until tomorrow, we do, as we always come up with, we remind you there could be no peace without justice. There could be no protest without Ma'at.
Earth and pouring, and the mic like a merchant, cursing at the
He's going to be